This is CliffCentral.com.
All right. How do you like that? That's called Mama by Jonas Blue with William Singh. It is 7 o'clock on CliffCentral.com. I hope you're having a good start to your Friday morning. Woohoo! The weekend is here. It's very exciting. Mubs loves weekends. I love weekends. Even if you're doing nothing this weekend, it's still better than having to work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can I start off with something today?
Do you want to get something off your chest?
No, it's not even off my chest. But you know, sometimes we get into these, there are tours that happen online.
Right. Some of them can be very entertaining.
And some people get caught up in them and, you know, eventually sometimes it gets confusing as to how it all started.
Sure.
So Sizwe Dlomo tweeted something about Thabo Mbeki.
Okay.
Said something like, the way Thabo's father raised him made him terrible with people. That was his downfall. And it got about 120 retweets and, you know, some likes and some comments. And then a guy called Tulani. sorry.
That's you.
Don't know. What's going on with me today?
Ooh. No, it's just the coldy.
I hope it's not. Yeah, I hope it's not a cold or anything. Anyway, Tulani replies, the problem is MTV made you think analyzing albums means you can analyze issues of national interest. Udagiwe-san. So, lots of shade thrown by this Tulani at Sizwe, which has then led to a stream of comments from other people.
Of course, as it does.
And loads and loads of pictures saying, where's the chill? Ah, so mean. What are you saying? Thank you, someone says. Mutse Matibe says, thank you for handling this. What a useless post.
Wow, guys.
And people just climbed in to Sizwe Dlomo. You know, there is no nice place on Twitter when this stuff starts.
No.
No.
It goes crazy. And it goes crazy very quickly.
But you know, the Twitter gallery, they annoy me too sometimes. I mean,
oh, hell yeah.
People are just sitting there and they're waiting for someone to step
out of line.
To be insulted.
And it's usually someone who's much, much more well known than them.
Absolutely. They're just waiting there as if they've got nothing else going for them.
Well, they don't.
For something to go down. And then they all want to hop on that bandwagon and they want to be like, yeah, yeah. And, you know, they want to add their 2 cents worth. No, the Twitter gallery annoys me at the best of times.
Meanwhile, the Daily Maverick are inviting the Guptas. They're saying to them publicly, dear Prime Minister's Gupta, the gathering.
Prime Ministers.
The Daily Maverick gathering would like to invite you to attend.
Okay. Yeah, the gathering is an annual thing that the Daily Maverick do, right?
Yeah.
Where they basically
haven't ask, you hosted some of those sessions as well?
I co-hosted one of the sessions with Ranjini.
Well, that's right.
Well.
Yeah.
I hosted one last year, I think.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is they'll, you know, they'll get a group of people from the political space together and then a couple of journalists get to ask them questions in front of a live audience. It's you know,
it's a very good show.
It is.
Apparently, it's also a high ticket price. People pay 450 rand or something to go there.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's quite an important place to be if you want to hear the from the horse's mouth what's going on politically. All right, so that's some of the news from Twitter. What's going on, Mubs? What do you need to tell us?
Well, it would seem that getting a visa to the United States is about to become even trickier. Donald Trump's administration.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Donald Trump's administration have issued new protocols that will require all nations, that's all of us, to provide extensive data to help it vet visa applications and also determine whether a traveler poses a terrorist threat. This is according to a cable which was obtained by Reuters that has been distributed by the United States to all U.S. diplomatic posts. So countries that fail to comply with the new protocols or take steps to do so within 50 days could face travel sanctions.
Jeez.
So let's have a look at some of the things that they...
Yeah, what do they want to know?
Okay, so the memo lays out a series of standards that the U.S. will require of other countries, including that they issue or have active plans to issue electronic passports and regularly report lost and stolen passports to Interpol. It also directs nations to provide any other identity information which is requested by Washington for the U.S. visa applications. This includes biometric or biographic details. The cable sets out requirements for countries to provide data on individuals it knows or has grounds to believe are terrorists, as well as criminal record information. So if your country suspects that, you know, Gareth, you're a little bit shady, mm-hmm. you have to alert the United States that, oh, well, Gareth is a little bit shady. So, you know, watch your back.
Mm-hmm.
Further, countries are asked not to block the transfer of information between U.S.-bound travelers to the U.S. government and not to designate people for travel watch lists based solely on their political or religious beliefs. Mm. Apparently, this is the first time that the U.S. government is setting standards of this nature for the information that is required from all countries. But, you know, some people are saying, no. Let's not blow this thing out of proportion. What the U.S. government are asking for is pretty standard procedure, and it's the kind of information
Exactly.
It's the kind of information that governments need to share with each other anyway.
Yeah, this doesn't sound so odd to me.
No, I don't think so.
So if you're a terrorist, it's going to be difficult to get into the U.S. It's going to be difficult to travel. Should be.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop. Okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Mm. So we all know that Gareth is very particular about pizza. It has to be margarita, nothing less.
Hey, I don't make
nothing more.
I don't make rules for everyone else. You can put whatever crap you want to put on yours, but right. That's what I do.
Okay. So then, Gareth, how do you feel about the new mac and cheese pizza? Oh my gosh, I feel sick just saying it.
Okay, no, hold up now.
Take your pizza and just add macaroni and cheese.
Mm. Sis.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly.
Okay. Oh. So please describe what this vibe is.
So today is apparently National Mac and Cheese Day. Do you remember how you were telling us?
Is that the reaction you get when you hear of a mac and cheese pizza?
Do you remember how you were telling us that there is a day for the silliest of things in
Everything.
The world?
Oh, yeah.
So today is National Mac and Cheese Day. Happy National Mac and Cheese Day, people.
Fantastic.
Mm.
Although I don't know that macaroni and cheese is such a big thing here at home. Is it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think it's a big thing in America.
Yeah, it's a big thing in America. So Pizza Hut have created something called the Mac and Cheese Stuffed Crust Pizza. Just in time for National Mac and Cheese Day. Thank goodness this will be just a once-off thing. But yes, it's exactly what you imagined. It's a pizza base with macaroni and cheese piled on top of it, and then just more cheese added onto it to just... screamed Gareth from the back.
Now, hold up, party people. Are you really letting this sink in properly about the prospect of the cheesy goodness of what a mac and cheese be? What's different about it? Because
how much cheese can a person have?
You know what?
Cheesy goodness. It's like a little extra cheesy margarita.
Stop it. It's too much cheese.
I don't have a problem with cheese. I love cheese. Mm-hmm. But so immediately in my mind, all I'm hearing is carbs on carbs.
Yeah.
You've got your pizza base.
Fatness explosion.
And then you've got the pasta.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Sia. No, that's too much carbs.
I actually think at like 2 a.m, if you've gone out and someone offered you this, this would be a slice of heaven.
Okay, but at that time, you'd eat anything.
Yeah, steak and kidney pie from the garage.
Amanda, what's your feeling on this? You seem very animated about a mac and cheese pizza.
I think it sounds amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
I can't think of anything better, actually.
Really?
No, really. Like, the other day I had these mac and cheese croquettes where they make a ball of mac and cheese and then they put it in like breadcrumbs and then they fry it.
Oh my God. Where did you eat that?
At Hudson's. It was amazing. Good like, heavens. That pizza sounds like heaven.
Good.
Wow.
Heavens.
All right. Well, someone's going to be supporting Mac and Cheese Day. It's going to have to be Amanda from our group.
Right, so Pizza Hut revealed on their website that they'll have two flavors. They've got the classic one, so it's just your traditional mac and cheese, containing macaroni, cheese sauce, triple cheese blend, and crispy onion.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've got a barbecue version.
Are you all right?
I mean, now you are flavoring.
Now it's going to be smoky?
Now you're flavoring your macaroni and cheese with barbecue. So this one's got a barbecue base. Macaroni, cheese sauce, triple cheese blend, a barbecue drizzle, and crispy onion. I cannot.
It's too much.
It is too much.
Keep it simple.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you here, Gareth. Not to the extreme levels that you go with your pizza, But yes, this macaroni and cheese pizza doesn't sound like it's
come on,
the best.
Let's try to control ourselves. People, experimental people like Amanda, are fine with this stuff. I like it classic. Keep it simple. It works because it's already good. Don't need to improve everything, just some things. Yeah, you're halfway between.
I am there. I know ordinarily, like right now, I wouldn't exactly choose it.
Okay. This time in the morning, I couldn't eat any of that stuff. Tell you right now.
You know, I was trying to explain that to someone. So we were discussing about, you know, being on the show and the early mornings and how basically our clocks have now been wired to some odd pattern, including
some
the fact
ungodly pattern. Yeah, say it. It's true.
Including the fact that we can't, I don't think any of us except Ben eat breakfast.
No, but also bear in mind, like, and anyone who's listening to us live is going through the same thing, and everybody who wakes up early, and there are lots of us who wake up early. Some people go to gym at 5 a.m. You know? There's a lot of people who start their day very early. There are people who catch 3 or 4 different taxis to work every day, and they start sometimes at 4:30.
Jeez.
Even 4 o'clock. Now, at that time in the morning, your stomach can only handle certain things. You shouldn't be putting mac and cheese pizzas in at that time because it's going to go badly. You're going to end up with problems. But I've still not cracked this breakfast thing. All breakfasts to me are less than satisfying, all of them. And I just can't find anything that's healthy and that is edible at 5 a.m. I can't. I've tried everything.
Well, I mean, you usually have your apple, your weird apple combination with salt.
But that doesn't always work for me. I mean,
like, you want a filling.
You want something that's, substantial, because they keep telling you breakfast, the most important meal of the day. But they don't tell you what to eat. And I'm sorry, we can't fry bacon and eggs in the studio every morning at 6. Can you imagine?
I can't. Also, I don't know that that's like the best or the healthiest version of a breakfast that you can get is a fried breakfast every day.
Ooh. No, practically for us, there isn't really anything that works.
You just have to starve a bit. It's fine.
Hey, are you a second born at home? Where in the sibling hierarchy do you fall? Gareth,
I'm
you're the
eldest,
firstborn?
You're the youngest, Mubs, and Sia's the youngest.
Okay. Yeah. Amanda,
you're not the... Are you first, second, third? What's your position in the family?
In the family with your siblings?
I'm the last one out of... There's 3 older than me.
So ah, okay.
Yeah, you're the baby. Yeah.
All right. No second borns in this studio.
Think about that for a second.
But maybe if you're listening, you are a second born.
Uh-huh.
According to new research, second born children now have an edge on their siblings.
I always thought they had a problem.
Well, Gareth, interesting that you say that, because that edge, as it turns out, is that second borns are likely to be the troublemakers of the two children.
Ah.
A report from Joseph Doyle, who's an MIT economist, has found that secondborns, particularly boys, no surprises here, are more likely to rebel and cause mischief. The firstborn, the reasons that are provided for this is that the firstborn has role models who are adults, you know, because firstborn, you're the only kid there, you arrive, your role models are adults. By the time the secondborn arrives, there is already another child in the mix who is then likely to end up as this child's role model. But I mean, that role model is what? All of 2 years old at that stage.
Right.
So this is the proposed reason as to why secondborn children are more than not likely to turn out to be the troublemakers of the two. Both the parental investments are different, and the sibling influences probably contribute to these differences that we see in the labor market and what we find in delinquency. This is now according to this MIT economist.
Delinquency, I like that.
It is very difficult to separate those two things because they happen at the same time.
All right.
To find these results, Doyle and his colleagues looked at thousands of sets of brothers in both the United States and Europe. And they found that firstborns simply have their parents' undivided attention, whereas those born later have to compete for that attention, which is part of where that rebelling also develops and comes from.
But hang on, because it seems to me the study was only done on families where there are two children and they are boys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so in a situation where you're two boys in the family and you're the second born, this applies. Otherwise, it doesn't apply to the rest of us.
In general.
Okay.
Because...
So there are advantages. Because I always thought that the second born would be a problem child.
Well, they're saying that he's likely to be the troublemaker. Is that what, I mean, isn't problem child and troublemaker the same thing?
All I think about when I hear problem child is that movie from the 80s with
Macaulay Culkin.
No, it wasn't Macaulay Culkin, it was some other kid. And John Ritter was the father. And this kid was just a nightmare. He was a nightmare. Does anybody remember the problem child? You remember that movie?
Oh, is that the name of the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This ugly little redhead child who just caused shit everywhere.
I really thought that it was Macaulay Culkin.
He burnt things down. Oh, he had other kids get hurt. He was such a disaster. Do you remember the child?
Oh.
Do you know who I'm talking
okay,
about?
Okay, now just Googled.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I think for me, what I've basically just noticed is it's often the middle kids who are lost, though. Because, you know, if you're the oldest, you are deemed the responsible one. If you're the youngest, yeah, you're deemed, like, you know, the baby of the family. Mm-hmm. Anyone in between, it's like, well, who am I?
Who cares about you?
Nobody.
I don't want to say that, but it kind of is true.
Well, the eldest usually gets a huge share of the attention. And by the time the youngest comes along, they've learned to stand on their own 2 feet. And the middle kid is kind of in limbo. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's in a family of three. And that does happen, I suppose. I don't know. My brother is very focused. He's very together. He's the only one who's got kids. He's, you know, he's stable and all that stuff. Not that my sister and I are unstable, but we're definitely not as, he's very together. He's very kind of, he's grounded. You know, my sister and I are kind of a little bit all over the place. She's very focused on her work. I'm very focused on my work. But we're quite loose in other ways.
But do you really think that has to do with the fact that he's a middle child?
Yeah, I do. I think where you grow up in the family is very, very important. It does define certain aspects of your character, your personality.
So what is it? It's the balance of being independent, but...
Yeah. Bit of that. You know, it's not... I'm not saying I'm no psychologist, but there's something going on there. All right, can I talk about SAA for a second? We spoke about this the other day. A lot of people are criticizing a national airline. Well, according to an article by Guy Leach on the Daily Maverick, they are in a terminal spiral dive at SAA.
So that sounds to me like they're in the kind of situation where there is no more help for them. Terminal?
Well, government have bailed them out with $2.3 billion to replace the Standard Chartered loan, which they've lost. And what is telling is that the airline was unable, despite its best efforts and benefit of supposedly copper-bottomed state guarantees, to entice any commercial lender to step in. Not one commercial lender would get involved. So that means, and this is what I find fascinating, we pay about 500 rand to subsidize every seat on SAA, including the business class seats.
Hmm. 500 rand.
As taxpayers, every ticket sold, 500 rand of that ticket is coming from you and me.
Okay.
Think about that, including the business class ones. Doesn't that make you worried? Huh? I mean, there are still people in this country who want the state to own these enterprises. Wholly and completely. SAA was spun out of Transnet in 2006. They've cost the taxpayer an average of 1 billion rand a year. Thus, there is a 20 billion rand loan guarantee from the state. If you take it back to 2006.
Okay, when did the decline begin? As Justice would say in his title book, we have now, our descent. When did SAA start nosediving? When did the bad management start becoming like...
Well, in 2009, President Jacob Zuma appointed his close friend Dudu Mieni to the SAA board.
Okay, all right.
Since then, the airline has been treated as an asset to be looted and managed by inept cronies. Losses have increased from 1 billion to 4 billion rand a year.
Jeez.
And much of the skilled management has left or been purged. There's your answer. Can SAA be turned around, he argues? He said no. It's
okay.
Time for a groundswell revolt demanding that the airline be privatized and removed as a burden from the state, the taxpayer, and consequently the poor.
Yeah.
I mean, why are we keeping this going? I don't know a lot of poor people who fly.
No, they can't afford it.
Right. So if we're going to take good government money and throw it into a bad company like SAA?
I mean, we might as well be taking that 500 rand and flushing it down our own toilets.
Correct.
That's really what we should be doing.
So privatize the airline. Stop with this nonsense about nationalization. Anybody who says that the state should own stuff and that they should manage stuff, just look at SAA. And then come up with a good answer, please. I dare you. Show me how you could do it properly. Because this government can't. They absolutely cannot. And don't just tell me, oh no, well, it's this particular government. It seems to me SAA has cost us since 2006 over R1 billion every year. Throw it in the trash can. It's done.
Who, I mean, when you speak of privatizing it, though, would that be a good buy for anyone who thought, hey, look at SAA, I think I could purchase them and turn them around and, you know, make something of the business?
Would you want it?
I don't know enough about business to know that I would want it.
Would you feel comfortable?
Going to be 100% honest about that.
Would you feel comfortable? I wouldn't want to run an airline. It's a very, very tough thing to run. You've got very tight margins. You've got fuel problems with foreign currency exchanges, the cost of oil.
Your planes are getting older with every distance that they travel.
Right. You have to maintain the planes. Mm-hmm. It's by no means an easy operation, which makes all the other airlines such incredible success stories by comparison with SAA, if you think about it. Because they've not only managed their finances very well and not gone into the red, but they've managed it in an environment where SAA has such unfair competitive advantages.
Yeah.
What if a certain family who had the money to buy SAA...
Uh-oh. I know where you're going with this.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
What if the Guptas offered to buy it? Would you feel comfortable there?
I don't feel comfortable about anything that the first family do from this point onwards.
The first family? Is that what we're calling them officially?
Because I'm even surprised we're referring to them as prime ministers. Prime ministers of what exactly? Are they officially...
No, there's nothing official about the Guptas. Everything with them is unofficial. That's kind of how they work.
And underhanded.
Yeah, unofficial, totally. Unrecorded, behind the scenes, illegal.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe we need Bell Pottinger to advise us on what to do here.
Oh, boy. From bad to worse.
All right. Let's move on. What other things do we need to know?
So in Wimbledon news, which, you know, I haven't watched a single match because I just don't have the time. But anyway, how's this? Venus Williams.
You haven't watched any Wimbledon?
I haven't.
You've been such a fan.
How's your
so
mother
many years.
Faring?
Well, I mean, she's all right. Look, this... Oh, your mother, yes.
Oh, yeah. She's a big fan.
So this weekend, it wraps up.
She's already
up.
Planned her weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. So Venus Williams has become the oldest woman in 23 years to reach a Wimbledon final. Hey, look at you, Venus. Do you remember how Ben was telling us about how those evil British journalists had made her cry in the one press conference because they were just pushing her for responses with regards to that car accident that left a man dead? And then shortly after that, you know, they came out and said, no, actually Venus Williams didn't break any laws leading up to that accident. So it's actually quite interesting that, you know, she's made it all the way to the Wimbledon final. Given all the stuff that she must be thinking about or must have been thinking about over these past 2 weeks. Mm. She defied her age, 37 years, I'll have you know, and a despondent home crowd because Venus beat a Briton. Johanna Konta.
Konta?
Johanna Konta was the woman that Venus Williams did away with. 8 years after her last Wimbledon final and more than 2 decades since Martina Navratilova became the last 37-year-old to reach the same stage. Yeah, it was a clinical execution as far as those who watched are concerned. All it required was 2 sets, 6-4, 6-2. And she is now going to be playing Garbine Muguruza in the final tomorrow.
Muguruza,
yes.
Sounds like a character from Lord of the Rings.
I mean, I kind of love the story because, you know, in the absence of Serena Williams because of her pregnancy, who in all likelihood would have won.
Yeah.
There's at least a 50% chance that a Williams will still win Wimbledon.
That's amazing. Like, that's going to make Oracine really proud.
Like, it's just.
But more than that, you know, the Williams sisters are just the superhumans on this planet. Let's just actually accept that now as it is. I mean, when, you know, Serena was pregnant and she still goes ahead and she wins. When Venus is going through so much turmoil and she still says, you know what, screw it, I'm going to get to the finals. Like, I saw Serena the other day. There she was, you know, with her massive belly now. And she was just casually still on the court. And she, you know, caption was along the lines of, still got to keep my body up for training or whatever the case is. I'm just like,
yeah, look,
damn it, y'all. There's nothing that's going to keep you guys down.
When you're an athlete, I suppose you can do that kind of thing with ease.
I think when you're Williams, because they have some
superhuman something going on there.
You know, their father's going through a mess of a divorce, even, and they have said.
Yeah, by the way, anybody who says
past it.
Anybody who says, "Oh, if you come from a broken home, you won't do as well as people who come from a family where your parents are still married." Look at the Williams sisters.
Yeah. Their father's in his 70s. He's been married for about 7 or 8 years to this young lady in her 50s. So firstly, you already go, but they are now in the process of getting divorced based on allegations of the fact that the wife has been stealing social security checks of Mr. Williams.
Oh.
And firstly, you go, hold up. So isn't like social security the equivalent of like a grant? Like a social
Why
grant.
Is he on social security?
That's it. And then there's something.
Don't his daughters give him any money?
That's bizarre. But like the wife was allegedly like wiring this money straight into her account. So maybe he doesn't even know that he was actually, you know, put down for social security checks. But hey, she's been taking that and it's a whole messy thing.
So your parents can be absolute trash, but you could still be a big
winner.
That's good news for a lot of people.
Hey, you leave Oracine out of that trash mess.
Oracine. Have you seen how she's... Oracine is something else to behold when she's on the in the stands there, cheering and clapping and carrying on. She holds court. She's got a whole bunch of people around
it's
her.
It's her show.
It's her show. I made these girls. I'm going to watch.
Mm. She gets to run minions in that court of hers.
All right. It's time for East Randers. Are you ready?
Were we ever ready?
No, are we?
What we're doing in East Randers is every week we get to meet someone from the East Rand and we get to put a picture up in our minds of what kind of personalities and characters dominate the East Rand of Johannesburg, which is a unique ecosystem. It's an ecosystem that many of us know a little bit about, but not very many of us know a lot about. We're going to change that right here. East Randers.
My play story involves four guys, a pile of bricks, and a cul-de-sac. After a pretty decent student night at Roxy's in Melville, which probably isn't there anymore as the story happened about 15 years ago, we were on our way home about to drop each friend off at their house, and we happened to go past a friend who didn't come with us to have a party. I saw a pile of bricks and had a light bulb moment. Why don't we build a wall? After about 5 seconds of convincing everyone and getting them to agree, we jumped out of the car and quickly built a double brick wall about waist high across the cul-de-sac, blocking it off completely. Unfortunately, those days we didn't have awesome cell phones with awesome cameras and flashes, and basically every picture we took looked like crap. But we tried nevertheless. The best part of it was not the fact that we built a wall across a cul-de-sac, because that's pretty awesome, but that the next door neighbor to our friend was a girl who was actually going out with one of the guys who helped build the wall. And in the morning, her dad was taking her to school, pulled out of the driveway, saw the wall, and made her dismantle the whole wall before he would drive through it to take her to school. And we found out our friend just drove on the sidewalk to get past it. He didn't even bother about the wall. So, you know, that was one of the things that happened here in the Vale. So listen next time for more of the crazy stuff
from
that happens
the
to us in the side of the woods.
There we go.
Peace.
Another interesting character from the Vale.
Okay.
Building walls across cul-de-sacs.
Well, look, as soon as a story starts with, this story involves four guys.
Drunk.
Bricks and a cul-de-sac. Yeah. You know.
You know it's going to be bad.
You know it's not about to be, you know, end well at all.
All right, here are a couple of comments on some of the stories we've covered this morning. First of all, Greg says, mac and cheese pizza. Does it come with directions to the doctor for your heart attack that's on its way? It sounds awful. Sorry for the language, but SAA is an F show. They can't sort themselves out, yet they charge as much as R1,000 for a 2-hour flight from Zambia. The excuse is that there are airport taxes? Mm. Yeah, good point, Greg. Roman says that the problem is that it has reached a stage where state-owned enterprises cannot be privatized because no one will buy them. They have to be liquidated.
I mean, I remember asking Anthea this question, and, you know, she said that it could even be a case of another airliner buying out SAA, like a foreign airliner.
I don't think anyone wants them.
Oh.
That's the problem, is they're not going concerns anymore. They're concerns, but they're not going concerns.
Mm.
Nobody wants to touch them. The unofficial official family, official first family, is the Guptas. That's according to WhatsApp. And I'm the second born, says Vincent. I think my parents didn't care a damn about me. I could disappear all day long, and they wouldn't even look for me.
Oh.
That's probably why I was in so much shit as a child. But if I was the firstborn, they would turn the table upside down to try and find me. Those bastards. That's his parents he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then somebody says here you should try Nutribullet smoothies for breakfast. I've got that, but I haven't. My problem is I don't buy the ingredients.
You don't buy the fruit?
Oh, well, you have to buy fresh stuff. You can't go once a week and buy groceries. You've got to buy twice a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have to buy the right stuff.
Mm.
I'm not organized enough with grocery shopping. It's half my problem.
Yeah.
And then somebody says, problem child. Yeah, I remember that little son of a bitch. It's worth saying a few years ago, I was given 10 Rand worth of Bitcoin in a promo at a conference I was at, and today it's worth 80 to 90 Rand. Not a huge amount of growth, but 800% growth is nothing to sniff at. Yeah, absolutely. That sounds pretty damn good. All right, when we come back, Sia's going to introduce us to a bunch of talented kids who are in the studio. Sia, do you want to tell us what this is all about?
I'm not talking about Beyonce's talented kids.
What do you mean Beyonce's talented kids?
Guys, I'm not even joking. I literally feel lightheaded in this exact moment.
What happened?
A mere 19 minutes ago, a certain Beyonce Knowles Carter casually posted on her Instagram the very first pictures of her twins.
And how come you think they're talented?
Yeah.
They are Beyonce's babies.
Yeah.
And
that is it. They come from the womb of the king that is Beyonce.
Yeah, but their father is Jay-Z. They could look revolting.
But as Jay-Z says in his new album, there's no such thing as an ugly billionaire. He's cute. So
okay. All right.
They have
so
the cute billionaire gene.
The beehive are about to explode. Their heads.
I'm amazed.
Their
at how,
heads are about to explode because of this picture.
I'm so amazed at how people worship Beyonce.
Mm.
They worship her. She's not the world's best singer. Sure, she's a good-looking woman. She's married to Jay-Z. They're a power couple. I get that there's a lot of excitement going on there, and I totally understand the impact that these two have had in their own careers and together.
Mm.
They're spectacular people. But to worship them like that is just not good.
And
the minute you role model another human being, you're about to be disappointed. Because let me tell you, something's going to go wrong somewhere. One of the kids is going to end up a drug addict.
Oh.
Or someone's going to burn down the house. Or someone's going to be killed in an accident. Or something terrible is going to happen. And then you have nothing to worship anymore. Don't do it.
In my mind.
Don't do it with sports stars. Don't do it with singers. Don't do it with actors. Don't.
Yeah, you see, you speak that way, Gareth, because you, and I understand you completely, you don't worship anyone. I mean, you know, with Sia, there's Oprah and Beyonce, with Ben, there's Gary Player.
Yes. Like,
No. Mr. Gary Player.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Please understand.
Mr. Gary Player. But I agree with you 100%. You can't put people on such pedestals. They are.
In my mind, these people don't even have bad morning breath.
Yeah, you see, that's the problem. They do.
Beyoncé does not fart.
She does.
You've created a
Beyoncé
whole...
Beyoncé has beautiful toes.
you've created a whole false, like, species that she belongs to that the rest of us don't.
Yeah, she's not human. She is a Beyoncé. And we look over the fact that she names one of her kids Sir. We look over that.
Is that the name?
That one of the names. Yeah, look, Sir Carter. And the other one is Rumi.
That's very much a celebrity thing.
Kara's face.
No. That is very much a celebrity thing, is giving your children
stupid names
out of their names. Yeah. I mean, Apple. Gwyneth did it with Apple.
They basically said that they can accessorize better with your outfits.
Gwen Stefani's one child is called Zuma. Like,
I mean, what a thing to do to a child.
It's very much a celebrity thing, giving your kids out of their names.
Let's see. Just prepare yourself for today on social media with many other people being like dying over these
today
pictures.
Today would be a great day to take off on social media, if you ask me. So today I will not be posting anything or reading anything on Twitter or Instagram.
You probably missed it, but a few days ago there was this little clip. So evidently Blue Ivy, who's Beyonce and Jay-Z's eldest daughter, was in the studio at some point, and they recorded her in what they deem now a freestyle, but she's four, five years old, and it was just gibberish. Literally, it did not make sense. Everyone was dying over this.
How
Everyone
are you?
Was quoting her. It was just revolutionary.
Oh, yeah.
No, Blue Iris, no.
You quoted Blue Iris yesterday, so don't do that.
Oh, I'm glad.
Okay.
Blue Iris is a 67. She's dead now, but she's a 67-year-old porn star.
Rest in peace, Blue Iris.
Rest in peace, Blue Iris.
Whoa.
Your work.
Not Blue Ivy. Yeah. Don't confuse the two. They're very different people.
Your work and legacy, you know, will be forever remembered.
Okay. All right, see ya. So now that we're done with Beyonce's kids.
Yeah, now you want to tell us about these kids who are outside.
Yes. More talented kids.
Here's Sia with a look at what's coming up on the show this morning. Not only the kids, but who our guest is after 8 o'clock. Sia Sangweni, over to you.
I like this. I really do. So coming up at 8 o'clock, we have our guest, Simon Robertson, who's stepping in. He's the man and the powerhouse and heads up the team behind the Media Tech Expo, which CliffCentral.com is proud to be a media partner of. So we're actually going to be discussing the tech world, the latest trends there, and how everything is going down at the Ticket Pro Dome next week from the 19th to the 21st. So that's something to look forward to at 8. But before that, we have all the way, kind of representing, I feel, from Durban, these teenage singers who go by the name of Kweni Kuza. And they have a new single called Speed of Light. So they'll be doing a mini performance of that. Right. And as well doing a cover of Pata Pata as well. So that's
the
awesome.
Miriam Makeba super hit.
Oh, yeah. They've set up all of their instruments just outside. So we'll take a listen to that as well in a bit.
Awesome stuff. All of that and much more. Friday morning. This group called Kweni Kuza, by the way, that name comes from Ete Kweni, that's the first part, and Kwaduguza, the second part. Two of the big municipalities on the coast of KZN. It's a music band consisting of teenage prodigies from 13, 14, and so on, from Durban, Stanger, and all the way up and down the coast there between those two cities, formed in February of 2016. They've performed on stages. There's about 1,000 of them outside, right, Sia?
Yes.
It looks like 1,000 people out there. It's a
we
huge
have the main band, but then there's everybody who came in.
Say hello, everybody. Well, you don't sound like. Come on, is that all the enthusiasm you can get for this morning? Try again. There we go. It's a little bit better. Okay, I promise you, there's a lot of them. They're filling up the room, basically. All right, so we're going to talk to them, find out about where they come from and what they're up to. They performed at the Durban Jazz Festival for the first time in December 2016. Is that right? 15,000 people?
That's correct.
All right, and what's your name?
My name is Andrew. I am the band manager.
All right, Andrew.
Yeah, so Kunikuza have been around for just over a year now. Uh-huh. And up in Joburg doing a promotional tour, doing some TV, some radio. They did a show at the Radium last night.
Very good.
So, yeah, they have been building up a really big reputation in KZN.
What TV and radio are you doing up here?
We're doing Morning Live on Sunday morning. They're doing three songs.
Nice.
They're doing Yo TV tomorrow morning.
Have you all told your parents and your friends to watch you on TV on Sunday morning?
Yes.
Yeah, you better have.
That's what Facebook is for. Oh,
correct.
So, yeah.
All right. That's very exciting. And then radio, you said?
Yeah, so doing some radio tomorrow as well. Again, mainly acoustic stuff like you're going to hear today.
All right.
But the main thing, you know, is seeing them live is amazing. They're only 13 and 14 years old, but they're already basically professional. They've been playing since the age, some of them since they were 4 years old.
How do you select them? How do you find these people?
It's a combination. You know, music's an amazing thing. It's all about networks. So it was a combination of them playing in different projects and all standing out. And through myself and Neil Singh in Durban, who's our drummer's father, as well as another producer, we kind of all connected them together. And the first time they played, it was just magic. It was unbelievable. It was like they'd been playing together for years. And we just knew immediately there was something very special about them as a group. And since then, they've been playing big stages in KZN, like Durban Jazz Fest, like you mentioned, 15,000 people. They can play big stages and they can play in a lounge.
When do you get to rehearse because of school and all the rest of it? You obviously get limited time, and
absolutely,
when you can tour is very limited.
Yeah, so school comes first, and that's the motto.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to anyway. Saturdays are rehearsal times. But modern technology has made life pretty good for bands now. So basically what we do is if they're going to do a new song, sometimes they'll do a show and the show will request a song the 2 days before.
Uh-huh.
And we basically just WhatsApp the song to everyone.
Right.
And they learn it at home and we put it together. So, for example, the one show wanted in Calicutta. And we sent it to everyone. We worked it out. And 2 days later, one rehearsal for 20 minutes, perfect. And they did it on at the show, and it was great. And the version of In Calicutta is on YouTube, and it's a very unique version, rock guitar-oriented In Calicutta.
Wow.
You know, I must say I'm amazed that, you know, there are 13 and 14-year-olds who were performing last night, got up early this morning to come and do this interview. We'll be doing a series of interviews throughout the weekend and performances. I mean, that's a demanding schedule, but I suppose it also teaches them, you know, about work ethic and discipline. And at 13 years old, that's pretty impressive.
So the motto for the group is superstars in training. So for the next few days, it's just a 4-day tour. It's to really give a sense of what it's like to be a touring musician. Getting up early, I don't know how you've done it for so many years, getting up at whatever, the crack of whatever. So it's really for them to understand how the industry works. They've all got enormous talent. So they're going to be around the music industry in South Africa for many, many, many years, together and in different projects. So this 4 days is really their first real experience of a touring musician, waking up early, doing radio. From here, we're going for a magazine interview. Then we're going to CakeNet, Chet Know. So we've got a full schedule. But their energy is fun. It's the parents behind me that sometimes need the energy. Last night we did 4 or 5 different things, and after the show at 9 o'clock at night, all the kids were running around. So yeah, they've got endless energy.
All right, very good. So can we hear some of this talent? I'm curious to meet some of the people here. Can I speak to Lissandra quickly? Hello, Lissandra. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. How old are you?
I'm 14 years old.
Good. And whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Newlands East at Durban.
Very cool. How did you get into singing?
I actually started entering Gateway to Frame, and I won the first category.
Was that at Gateway Shopping Center?
No.
All right. So tell me how you won that. What did you sing?
I sang Umuntu Ngabantu by Brenda Fassie.
Absolutely. Oh. Brilliant song. Very, very good. And they were blown away?
Yes, obviously.
Obviously.
Yes, ma'am.
Obviously.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
All right. So what do you think of what you guys are doing now, being able to tour the country, go on TV, go on radio, go everywhere, and people want to hear you sing? Is this exciting?
Yes.
All right. What are you going to sing this morning?
We're going to be singing our original song, Speed of Light and Pata Pata.
All right. Shall we do this?
Yes.
All right. Whenever you're ready, I'm sitting here waiting.
Mm.
Bated breath. All right. We've got musicians here as well. Let me just fill you in on who exactly is who in the zoo before we start. So we've got Sabian Lee Singh. He's 13 on the drums. Neo Moy, who is on the bass guitar. Entlem Dleche, who is on the keyboards. And Spukazi Gebashe, who's also on the keyboards. All right. Whenever you guys are ready. And then, of course, we just heard from Lissandra Maggiola, who's on the lead vocals. All right. And whenever you guys are ready, you can hit the start. Go for it. There we go. This is live, by the way. And all live, all the instruments, all the singing, everything was done live. It's beautifully put together. That's excellent.
That's going to be in my head for pretty much the rest of the day.
It's
such a nice, like, catchy.
Very catchy song. Who wrote that?
Our manager, Andrew.
Okay, very nice, Andrew. That's some talent and ability there on its own. Okay, are you going to do one more for us?
So. Yes. Just a reminder again, what were we doing at 13 and 14?
I
was sitting in the
mud.
We had
zero talents.
Well, I was stuck in the pits because that's when Michael Jackson died. So, you know, shame, I had my priorities straight there.
Shame. See, has never really got over that.
Yeah, no, it's still
right.
Tough.
What are you guys going to do for us next? What's the plan?
Pata Pata.
Ah, beautiful. Let's go.
Pata pata, I suck through the city.
Beautiful. Nicely done.
Nice.
Sandra, who are all these other people?
The back.
Yeah, all the backing crew.
The parents.
Oh, there's the parents.
It's an entourage. Okay.
Yeah, well, you've got to take the parents because, I mean, who's going to look after you guys, right? Ooh. And you'll go out in Johannesburg and behave badly if your parents aren't here with you. So well done, parents. Aren't you proud of your kids? This is phenomenal, huh? Yeah.
Sure. Mm. That was very nice. Wow. All right,
so where can we see you performing if we happen to be in KZN in the next couple of months? Come up here, Andrew. Tell me quickly what's going on, even in Johannesburg.
I'm going to have to jump in.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so live performances, they're actually going to take a break after this kind of promo tour. You know, like I said, it's mainly TV and radio for now. They are then going to – we've got a surprise pop-up show in KZN, so we can't actually reveal too much about it, but they will be popping up by the beach somewhere.
Nice.
And then, yeah, they've got a, they get invited to play quite often, so like I say, they're back to school in just over a week, so we're going to let them go on holiday and have a nice time, and then we'll start booking some more shows for them.
Fantastic. Gwini Kuza, thank you so much for coming to spend some time with us today, guys. And we hope to see you rise from strength to strength, and maybe one of these days you'll be on the stage at the Grammys. Who knows, right?
Oof.
It's possible. I see Lysandra's just, she's shaking her head. She's like, yes, absolutely, I'll be there.
She said, obviously.
Maybe I'll leave the rest of them behind. I'll end up there. You've got to take them with you, all right? These are your people. You got to look after your people. All right, very, very good. Thank you so much, everybody. And we will continue with some more interesting stuff in a little while. We got Simon popping by, talking about media tech. Plenty of good stuff between now and 9 o'clock.
This is CliffCentral.com.